Hello and welcome to The Way I See It, and my name is Vanessa Coleman. Now today we've got a bit of a mixed bag. I'm going to be visiting Alan Smith at his care home in Swanage. He wants a little bit more of a rant. I'm also going to be touching on my subject of bonkers EU. But first of all, I'd like to talk to you about windmills and the truth about the great wind power fraud. I'm quoting from an article that comes from Australia, and the heading of this one is Shredding Birds and Mincing Logic. When you see pictures of these amazing creatures like eagles, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen an eagle in flight, but it is the most amazing thing. So when you hear that so many of these animals are being lost through these horrendous windmills, it makes you stop and think. I personally, as I'm sure you've gathered by now, hate windmills and don't want to see them at all. Well, certainly not here in Dorset on the Jurassic Coast. The Navitas Bay scheme is something that many people here are fighting against, and I don't know at this stage which way it's going to go. Recently, Tony Abbott caused a stir with his entirely rational and reasonable observation that wind turbines are ugly, an opinion that further disturbed Fairfax opinion page fixer Elizabeth Farrelly, who countered that she likes their whiteness and grandeur and how they catch the morning light like so many celestial beings beamed across the landscape. Yes, the obvious response once one has recovered from exposure to such fly-blown prose is that while beauty will always be in the eye of the beholder, the bottom line cost of extracting volts from Zephyr's presence an irredeemably ugly mess of red ink. Simply put, when the outrageously expensive hilltop turbines are judged against the cost of electricity from coal and gas-fired power plants, they make no economic sense whatsoever. And as to their alleged environmental benefits, no amount of whiteness and grandeur can blind the rational observer, a category which would not, on almost any topic, include Farrelly, to turbines' disastrous environmental and ecological impacts. So, one of the largest wind farms in the world is Roscoe in Texas. Apparently, it's rated at 782, I guess this is megawatts, but its actual output is closer to 230, I think it's megawatts. It cost $1 billion to construct, and it requires a backup capacity that is not included in this cost. But these wind turbines, which so many environmentalists find charming, are very resource-intensive creations. Each turbine requires about 250 to 350 tons of raw materials to construct, not including the 1,000 or so tons of reinforced concrete that form the base of each tower. Quoting Roscoe again, there are 782 turbines spread over 400 square miles, and generally they're spaced about 300 meters apart. Now, the CO2 emissions from the manufacture of the concrete bases alone is in the order of 800,000 tons. To that must be added the CO2 emissions from the backup generator. Suddenly, the CO2 abatement provided by Roscoe doesn't look like a very significant number. Oh, and I must quote some other figures here. The Spanish Ornithological Society estimate that Spain's 18,000 wind turbines, my God, kill between 6 million and 18 million birds and bats per year. That estimate may be on the high side, but even the lower estimate is between 140,000 and 328,000 birds every year. Whatever way, it's still too many. It's still one too many. Apparently, the heart of any wind turbines, the permanent magnet, is made from rare earth minerals, most of which are mined in China. Well, isn't it any wonder that China is promoting wind power? So, basically, in a nutshell, with those few statistics, not that I needed them to convince me that I hate wind farms. I think a lot of people look at things, but they really don't know the facts. I just know that I don't want to see a load of windmills when I go down to the beach here in Bournemouth. So here I am. I've come to visit Alan today in his care home here in Swanage. And he's still got a little bit more ranting to do. So I'm going to pass it over to Alan for him to begin.
Hello, Vanessa. Britain faces two calamities, which our Chancellor and government, the BBC and media fail to acknowledge. That is, we are in horrific debt with our country and economy completely destroyed, and the sole cause of which is the EU enacted by our governments since Heath.
So how do you think all this is going to also fit into this situation with Greece?
Yes, well, if we go then to the EU, the EU has no financial basis whatsoever, and the powers that be are trying to kid Greece that the EU can rescue them. But in fact, as we know, the billions that they want for Greece, we ourselves are going to have to contribute a major part, as the other countries in Europe. But the fact is that all the countries in Europe, including ourselves, are totally bankrupt. We are actually buying debt to spend on debt. I mean, it is so farcical. And so this is the dilemma that I say, that our government just don't seem to grasp the basics of money, because we in the West are in a debt situation. That is debt, poverty and destitution. And that certainly does not improve the economy.
So really, I've come here and it's all doom and gloom.
Well, yes, but no. The solution, there's great solution. And that is get rid of debt.
And how would, if you were in charge, Alan, how would you begin that?
Well, you most certainly would clear yourself from the EU, because as we can see, the EU have been the problem all along.
Yeah.
So to kid yourself that we can clear debt and still live with the EU is just a contradiction in terms.
I don't know if you saw the other day, but our input to the EU is they're going to want more money from us again. Did you see that?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Well, this is a horrific thing. So they have already bankrupted us, and they are making us poverty. And you say, well, how have they destroyed our economy? Well, they have destroyed it because over the years, it's the accumulative effect of the monies that the EU have demanded over the years. That's where it has all gone wrong. Because business needs stability, banks need stability, and as soon as our economy was destroyed, and that was from particularly from the Labour those years ago, we were done for. So when they kid us that we have an economy, they're referring to the Bransons of this world. But that is only a thin slice at the top of the corporate and international. Now, they get their feeds because they overstride the countries. But the basic economy of Britain is, as our Treasury say at the end of the year, pre-Christmas, We are trillions of pounds in debt. The country, the government, central and local, are having to cut back drastically. And so the whole thing is in Queer Street.
Why do you think it is? I read the other day, why do you think it is that now more than ever, more people would vote to stay in the EU?
Yeah, this is the problem that has been highlighted by the Taxpayers Alliance. They reckon over 86% of the people in this country have no idea what the state of the economy is because the government cunningly will never tell them.
Yeah.
Instead of telling the truth, which is the Treasury statement at the end of the year, I tell you, the budget means nothing. People would think, oh, well, now the budget, the Chancellor has said he's putting everything right, so we listen carefully to the budget.
So would it's you say then it's really smoke and mirrors then?
Oh, very much so. It is. And you see, they're not believing what the government says, the Treasury.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so stupid, isn't it, that we have a government that doesn't even believe its own Treasury. I mean, it is beyond telling. So, and then, as I say, the West is in debt. And all that the West and the EU can produce is poverty and destitution. And that is what is happening. And for people to kid themselves that it would be right against our economic needs to leave Europe is total misrepresentation.
Yeah.
Because Europe has nothing to offer us whatsoever. By definition, all the members of Europe. So this misrepresentation of the economy, the fact is, it is, as the Treasury say, we're in total trillions of debt. And the very fact that a few years ago, we still talked about our concern for the future and the children. And
yeah.
There's no mention of that now.
No.
Well, just shows how serious.
The one of the reasons why Paul Perrin started this radio station was so that we could get the true messages out. So if people continue to listen to our podcast, hopefully by the time that the EU referendum is, and we hope that it does come about, that by that time they should be a little bit more informed, enough to vote no for that time. Anyway, thank you very much for your time today, Alan. And we look forward to hearing from you again.
A pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
Now, I don't know if you remember from one of my earlier podcasts, but I remember saying that it seemed as if there are people sitting there in Brussels who think, oh, what can we come up with today? What other silly bonkers rules can we come up with? I came across an article which says that high-powered hairdryers under threat as EU considers ban. Now, I think this would be terrible because I know that the power of the hairdryer makes such a difference when you are having your hair blow-dried. So apparently a study commissioned by the European Commission has identified up to 30 appliances, including toasters and kettles, which could be restricted. And it's because high-powered hairdryers are on a list of household electrical items the EU is considering banning in an attempt to curb energy consumption. But surely, with these things, the same as the Hoovers, to get the job done, if it doesn't take as much energy, then you're going to keep doing it for longer. So surely at the end of the day, it's going to use up the same energy. Anyway, who am I to know about that? But to me, that just makes common sense. So looking at what some of the salon owners are saying, also some of the silly things that I read here. Salon owners are tearing their hair out at a proposed new EU edict ordering them not to wear high heels. Now, that could be a bit sensible, but I don't think that many hairstylists could spend hours on their feet in extremely high heels. But apparently the proposed new Brussels rules would order hairdressers to have social dialogue with colleagues and cut the number of customers they can style in a day to prevent, I quote, in brackets, emotional collapse. So there must be work organisation aiming at optimising resource management and preventing emotional collapses. I mean, whoever comes up with such claptrap? So as one salon owner said, what on earth does that mean? It's got to be something to do with making sure hairstylists don't work too hard. And if we have to do less cuts, it will mean either salons employ fewer staff or prices will have to go up. And also, what about the ban on some jewellery, including watches and wedding rings, is also proposed for hygiene reasons. But surely experienced hairdressers and salon owners know the risks of their job and what to do, and they don't need a bunch of silly bureaucrats to act as their nanny. I mean, we've managed with all of these years. I can't think of anything other than things that hairdressers wear, colouring may have affected somebody, but all of these silly things. As I say, bonkers EU, just justifying their jobs, these people. Anyway, I'm sure that every week we can find and we can sort out some other bonkers EU rule. I would just like to finish by saying that your feedback it would be really welcome. And to the gentleman who said that he quite liked my voice, although I did sound a little bit matronly, well, yes, well, whatever floats your boat. Anyway, I hope you've learnt a little something from today's programme. And until the next time, have a great day and thank you very much. Bye-bye.